What's up, guys? Faruqi Bros here, back with our final podcast of 2023, where we'll be doing our top 10 movies of the year. But before we get into the first topic, I want to start with something more serious, like we've been doing these last few months, and that's talking about the situation in Palestine and Gaza. To date, more than 20,000 civilians have been killed by occupation forces. This number includes over 8,000 children. The number could be even 9,000, 10,000 children. Over 100 journalists, media workers, medical staff, UN staff. We're talking the hundreds of people getting killed. Over 1,700 complete families have been totally erased in these brutal bombings. Where the humanitarian organizations are saying the death toll could be even higher than that. And we want to make sure that everyone here knows that they can use their voice and call for peace. So if you look in the description below, you're going to see a link for a ceasefire. This is a way you can contact your elected officials. This is a way you can see the best resources. You can learn more, educate yourself. We want you to know that your voice can make a difference. So please check the link in the description and call for a ceasefire. So with that, let's transition right into the final stream of 2023, and we're going to be doing our top 10 of the year. So before I get into my top 10, we're all going to do our list. Let's talk about just generally like the year as a whole. Do we think this was like one of the better years for movies, maybe one of the more mid-year for movies? Zian, I mean, if you think about 2023, looking back now, was this like a pretty good year for cinema as a whole? I mean, we're still coming out of the pandemic. I think this is the first year we're truly out of it. What do you think?
I think it was a very solid year. There were a lot of strong films. I think what's interesting about this year is that there were a lot of great films that are in that 4.5 to 3.5 range, where it's more than it's been the last couple of years maybe. But from the clear front runners, where I think one of the absolute top echelon films, where it's not just this year, they're some of the best films of the last decade even, there aren't too many, in my opinion. I think maybe two or three at max. So in that way, it's like, okay, we got some that are, yeah, absolutely spectacular in a wider sense, not just contained to this year. But aside from that, I think there were many, many solid films that were great on their own and were great in this year. And it does bolster this year's comparison to maybe last year, the year before, in terms of year-to-year basis. So I think for that, I think it was a strong year. There are a lot of great films in the film festivals this year, whether it's Toronto or New York Film Festival, and others as well, like Cannes. So overall, it was a strong year. I think from the best of the best, less than a handful, though.
Yeah, for me, I was, and Samir laughed at me when I said this, I was saying this is a tale of two halves for the film year. I think there's been some really good movies and some really big clunkers. And I think, in a sense, and we're not going to talk about this too much in this podcast, but I think there's the heavy hitters, the directors where you know we're going to come through with heat, came through with heat. And in some ways, this year was also the death of the superhero movie, where every single superhero movie, whether it be Marvel or DC, flopped at the box office or flopped critically outside of one outlier, which we will discuss. Let's get right into it. Let's do our top 10 of the year. Who wants to go first? Should it be Zian, Samir? I think one of you two should go first. Which one? That's the question. Samir, do you want to go first? Do you want to kick us off? Or do you want Zian to go first? Me? I'm not going first.
I'm sure Zian can take it.
Zian, you're going first.
No, I don't want to go first.
Yeah. All right. Should I put your list up, or do you want to do it? All right. So here's Zian's top 10 movies of the year, as well as some honorable mentions.
So yeah, this is my overall top 20, but we're only discussing the top 10. As you can see, it was a strong year in terms of the top half of the movies that I've seen. Excuse me. But the top 10, I think they were kind of just on a class of their own. Between number 11 and 10, I was going back and forth. It was a tough decision for me because I really enjoyed both movies. I know Napoleon has not been getting any kind of hype. It's kind of been under the radar somewhat, where a lot of people aren't with it. It's either you love it or you hate it, and I happen to enjoy it a lot. So that snuck in top 10 over Meister for me, which I think was an incredible film. And I think Bradley Cooper was an incredible actor, and he deserves all the nominations and accolades that he'll be nominated for. So, but just personally, I think Napoleon just snuck in at top 10. Number 9, Barbie. There's so much to be said that we've already said in past streams. It was an incredible film. It is like a generational film almost, I think, box office-wise, thematically-wise. I think it was a very great film. and it kind of captured something unique that we haven't seen before. So that'll be number 9 for me. Number 8, Godzilla Minus One. Absolutely incredible film. I think on its budget, it looked incredible in terms of its visual effects and its CGI and what they were able to pull off in such a tight constraint. Story-wise, it was great as well. I think the performance was great. It was just it just sucks you into the film. It keeps you engaged the whole time from beginning to end. And just the idea of existential threat and Godzilla and him and like a villain side. I know we've gone back and forth with like the Americanized version of Godzilla. He's more kind of ambiguous where, yeah, sometimes he'll help the humans against the monsters sometimes, but you can't really trust him fully. Japanese version iteration, well, he's this current age. Pure villain, pure demon, pure monster. I like that version better, and I enjoy the film for that reason. Number 7, Anatomy of Fall. We talked about this on our last stream for the film festival. Incredible film. I think it was shot very well, very strong script. It keeps you engaged the whole time. And as an audience member, you feel like a sort of responsibility and you're kind of into the film because you make your own deductions as well as the film goes along. And I think that kind of engagement was very unique. So for me, that's number 7. American Fiction, I think top 2-3 scripts of the year. It was absolutely incredible writing. I think very sharp, very poignant, and both in a comedic sense and a very sincere sense, because it did have a lot of heart within a lot of the comedy aspects of it. And I think it did touch upon a lot of important subject that's very prevalent to today and the type of content and type of media that's being portrayed for the African-American community and about the African-American community. So I think this was a very strong film. I was actually going back and forth between number 5 and number 6 between this one, but in the end, I ended up with Killers of the Flower Moon for number 5. Scorsese, obviously, he's best of the best, so this was not a far cry from his top works. I did enjoy it very much. I did not feel the runtime at all. I think it went very well. I think it was paced well, except for the ending, which is why this is on the bottom of my top 5 and not towards the top, because I think it was spread out well until the end, where a lot of the things like the courtroom scene and just the way things turned out, it was just rushed a lot, where I felt like that could have used a little more spacing, could have more fleshing out, and then use of narration at the end instead of just showing what happened to them. I thought that was, it was interesting, but it was kind of a cop-out almost. That's like, yeah, we've reached the end of a runtime. We could only make it so much more longer, so let's just narrate the rest of it. I didn't really vibe with that, so that's why it's at the bottom of my top 5. Boy and the Heron, I think Miyazaki, obviously legendary, incredible in all his works. This was no different. Animation-wise, it was absolutely spectacular. Some of the moments, like when he's running in the town fire, it was like a moving painting almost. I think very, very well done. There's almost nothing like it, in a sense, where Miyazaki, they always, and Studio Ghibli, they always push the envelope of what they can do anime-wise, animation-wise. And everything else, story, the score, everything was just top level. So that would be number 4 for me. 3 and 2, I was going back and forth, but I ended up deciding it's Spider-Verse at 3. I think it is the best animated movie of this year. I think it was just an absolutely incredible film, animation-wise, voice acting-wise, story-wise. It captured the magic of the first and kind of just pushed it forward even more and expanded on the characters and the story. And I think it just, in every way, it was just an incredible movie. So that'll be number 3 for me. Number 2, Past Lives. We haven't really gotten to talk about it in past streams too much, but incredible screenplay, incredible script. On paper, it might seem a simplistic script, but I think there's so much heart to it. And it's a very sincere story about these two people and where they've come from their childhood and how they've ended up in their lives and that feeling of like longing and like the love that they used to have and what that means now. I think it was a very touching story, and all the actors did an incredible job showing the emotions that these characters, these people would feel in the story. And it was just shot well on every level. It was just a perfect movie. There was really zero faults with it. So that's why that would be number 2 for me. Number 1, we've spoken about it ad nauseum. Oppenheimer, I think, is just on every single possible level of filmmaking, acting, score, story, everything that Nolan adapted from the book and expanded on his own with other research. I think incredible on every level. This is one of the best movies of not even this year, but the past many years. And I think Nolan deserves all the accolades, all the nominations. I believe he deserves best director for this. I believe Cillian Murphy deserves best actor for this. I think this is just one of the top level movies that we've seen. I've gotten to see it, I think, three times now. And even the third time, I was like, oh, I'm probably gonna be bored of it. But it was just as incredible, just as amazing. And it kept me engaged from start to finish. I did not feel the runtime. I did not feel bored. And I feel like that it just speaks, it's a testament to how great of a movie it was. And that's why it's number one for me.
So that's pretty good. It's pretty good top 10. I feel like a lot of our lists, we're going to go through them. They're going to have similar components to it. But all of our ranking, the actual lists are, they move in different places. So let's see how it goes as we move on to Samir. Samir, what did you think about your top 10 movies of the year? Let me put it on the screen for you. Here's the list that you gave us.
Bro, did I use the right screenshot? What are you doing?
All right, let me get the new screenshot then while you start. If you have it, if you already know your screenshot, then say it in the meantime while I get it out.
I guess I think a lot of our movies are, yeah, like you said, a lot of our movies are the same. It's just a word that's pretty different. I think compared to Zane, only two of my movies are really different movies. But at 10, I have Barbie, which we talked about a lot. I think the satire and the comedy was done really well. Next, I have Spider-Verse at 9, which is pretty low. I think when I started the year, I had it pretty high. I gave it a 5 star at the beginning, but then over time, I think it worsened a little bit for me just because of just in its entirety. I don't think it's as complete as I thought it was originally. That's why I have it a little bit lower, but it definitely is in the top 10 as one of the best movies and the second best animated movie of the year. Then at 8, I have 8.
I got your list out now.
At 8, I have Anatomy of a Fall, which Jan just talked about. I think because of the ambiguity, just the way that it was told as a courtroom drama, I think it deserves the 8 spot. Then I have a movie that is pretty controversial. I think this is a pretty big hot take. Asteroid City at 7.
This is your hottest take, by the way.
I think it's very thematically rich, and I know that Wes Anderson likes to tell multiple stories or like multiple layered stories within one movie. So I thought it was done really well, even though people think it's pretty pretentious or he's like becoming a parody of himself.
I am one of those people who think that.
I think it was written really well. I just saw the ending again on Twitter and thought it was even better than I remember. That's why I have it that high up.
Before you go, I mean, I want to stop Asteroid City because Jan did make a contentious point. This is somewhere that we've off camera have debated ad nauseum about Asteroid City. I mean, Jan, what was it about that you didn't like that Samir liked so much?
I'm not sure what he's seeing in it. I think it was so overly pretentious where it was almost a caricature of Wes Anderson's own work, where it's like he's too into his own head for this film, and it hurt it so, it significantly hurt it because I am a fan. I'm not as big a fan as Samir is, but I am a fan of his work. I thought Grand Budapest Hotel is one of the best films. French Dispatch was okay. I think Astro City is also kind of like the okay territory. It is not that great. I honestly felt kind of bored throughout the movie. I don't think it survived.
I'm actually surprised.
Like him with Spider-Verse is getting worse for me the more I think about it. I think it was just... It was a huge miss. I think he just was too into himself in this movie.
Before Samir, I mean, I'm shocked two things already from your list. I'm shocked that Spider-Verse is so low, and I'm shocked Astro City isn't high enough. I thought it would have cracked your top 5. Either way, keep going.
The thing about Astro City is that coming off the French Dispatch, where he tried to do the same thing, where he was trying to tell multiple stories at once, I think that suffered from it a little more than this one did. I don't think that he became a parody of himself telling this story, even though it was like kind of self-aware, existential, or super meta. I think it was done pretty well. Next, I have American Fiction, which we've talked about. I think this is some of the best writing this year. Definitely top 3 scripts, like Zian said. Then I have Poor Things, which Zian did not have it on his list for some reason, which is just insane to me because this was probably the most unique film this year, just the way it was shot and what I have to say. I think Emma Stone killed it. She's probably the front runner for best actress if it doesn't go to
Lily Gladstone.
Lily Gladstone, yeah.
The visuals are the only, let me just retort Simir's points as he mentioned my name. The visuals, and yes, it's made very well, but script-wise, story-wise, is one step above it's garbage enough where it's just one step above Saltburn in terms of how bad it is.
That is insane. Saltburn is
yes. But because of the other elements, I do have it higher. Let me quickly see where I have it.
One second. The reason I don't like the Saltburn comparison is because Saltburn does a lot of that sort of that out there stuff, but it doesn't have much to say, I think.
Yeah,
and it doesn't execute on the script as much.
Scorpions at 18. So this is my top 20.
I'm surprised you mentioned Saltburn. I thought you were going to mention Bo is Afraid. It's kind of like the opposite coin of Bo is Afraid rather than Saltburn, but I don't know.
You know, a lot of those elements feed into what Poor Things is. Poor Things, well, quality-wise, it's a way better made film. I agree with that. Like, leagues ahead. Set-wise, production-wise, costume-wise, acting-wise, everything's better. Narratively-wise, they're both garbage.
All right, Samir, yeah. Go on with your list, yeah, if you want.
Next, I have Killers. I think my top four is very interchangeable. I just changed it recently again. All of these movies are close to five, if not five. I think the top two are five stars for me. Killers, of course, Scorsese is he's him. I mean, he knows how to write characters. He knows how to tell a story. Then I have The Boy and the Heron, which I think is the best animated movie of the year. I think this is Miyazaki's most personal story. That's why I have it so high up. It's not his best movie, but it definitely is one of his best movies. Then I have Past Lives, which just as a story, I think is one of the best told this year. Just the framing and the way it's told, I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a five-star movie. Then I have Oppenheimer, which we talked about, of course. I think it's objectively the best movie of the year.
There you go. I mean, we're going to see how that list stacks up. Surprisingly, before we go to the next one, my list actually is pretty close to Samir. It's more close than Samir than it is to Zian. But I'm gonna go to my list now, and I'm gonna take us home with this one, and it's let me get it up on the screen. All right, so my list. Okay, so obviously there's some honorable mentions, things that didn't make the cut. I'm more high on Asteroid City than Zian is. I'm a fan of John Wick as well. I like a couple of these movies here and there, but let's stick to my top 10. And here comes the debate. I'm telling you guys, I wish I had this debate 10 times on the stream. The amount of times that we've debated this movie, my number 10, and that's Air, directed by Ben Affleck, starring Ben Affleck. It's about the rise of Nike and the creation of the Jordan shoe, the first Air Jordan shoe.
Didn't Space Jam come out this year?
Space Jam came out two years ago. Okay. But... So Air, this is a story about Michael Jordan, his shoe, not Michael Jordan, the man, but the shoe. But I think, you know, I'm a basketball fan, but that's actually not what's getting me interested in this movie. It's Ben Affleck's directing style. Yes, you can call it bland if you feel that way, Zian and Samir, but I think that it was actually really well written. It was like an interesting workplace comedy drama. And that's what it was trying to be. It didn't try to reinvent the wheel. I think Viola Davis was quite good as, Michael Jordan's mom. And I think that, the way they use Michael Jordan as a narrative device, he never shows up in the movie outside of like a silhouette, but and when he does show up, it's clips of him playing in real life, like they spliced in. So this idea is that Michael's not a character in this movie. It's about Phil Knight, and it's about how he took Nike, which was kind of a garbage company in the 80s. It was known as a running shoe. Adidas was kicking its ass because Converse. Because you had Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They all were on the other team. No one was signing with Nike. So this interesting kind of like the main character of the movie is actually the company Nike. And I just think it's an interesting story. I mean, never got to talk about it in the stream, so I'm giving a little bit more love to it. But unfortunately, my brothers here don't agree with me and they think it's quite bad. And Samir, if you want to say why it's bad, you can say it quickly.
The problem with Air is that it's super generic and forgettable. That's my issue with it. Compared to there are so many movies that were just better than it this year. That it's incredible that it'd be in your top 10. Even in your top like 20. Even in your top 20 would be like, what are you doing?
I think top 10 is wrong too. I think it did. I agree that it had a very good screenplay. and a strong script screenplay.
And it's nominated for screenplay, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. That it was good. It was towards his benefit. But to Samir's dismay, this movie was better than Astro City. No matter what you say.
That is insane.
It's true. It's really factual.
It's true.
It's better than Astro City.
And every performance in Astro City was better than Valdez. And Valdez is a great actress, but she was not like nominated.
She was there for two scenes.
Okay, okay. But listen, it's about the quest, okay?
Listen, but it doesn't deserve top 10. You're 10, listen, 15 to 20 is fair.
Okay, Zion doesn't have his top 10 because of some misguided sense of who knows what. Samir doesn't have his top 10, but he doesn't like Matt Damon. So it's all there, you know? All the reasons are there, okay? But all I'm saying is I like the movie. It's
Shraz wants so badly a movie where, you know, Superman's in it, but he's just a silhouette. That's why he loves this movie so much.
Listen,
the real psychology behind why he loves it. It was literally
the headless cameo of Michael Jordan.
No, it wasn't.
It's the back of his head.
Who cares? Listen, Umar, think about it this way. I think LeBron's a GOAT, right? If I think LeBron's a GOAT, why am I saying the Michael Jordan movie is my top 10? So wouldn't I be like, oh, trying to get this guy down? I'm not. I'm saying it's a good movie. That's it.
No, it's because you know that Space Jam was so bad that you can't even have that conversation.
First of all, Michael Jordan.
Just like LeBron's resume and Michael Jordan's resume. You can't really, you know.
Well, for what it's worth, Michael Jordan was somewhat involved in this movie. He had to give his permission for a few things. So I guess in this case, Michael Jordan did win the war of movies between him and LeBron. But I digress. Let me move on to my top 10. Number 9, I have Poor Things, another movie that's not on Zion's list, but it's on Samir's list. But I'm not going to repeat a lot of the points because we've talked about it in our film festival podcast last week. But I just think it's a beautifully shot movie. I think the themes, yes, it's overindulgent. Yes, it's kind of supposed to disgust you at times. I did not like it that much when I first saw it. But over the course of the last 2 months, the more I thought about it, it's pretty good. Let's move on. Maestro. This is a movie Samir hates for some reason or dislikes. It's like Samir, when we came out of Film Festival, he was here. And then it started going down this way. For me, it's just stabilized, you know, maybe a little down, but stabilized. I think Bradley Cooper, does he deserve Best Actor, Best Director? I personally don't think so. But I do think he deserves a nomination. I think he's going to get accolades for that. It's just a good, well-made movie. It's like very by the numbers. You can tell there's a lot of craft into it. I like the mix of black and white and color. It's been done a few times this year across a few films, but I like the way this movie represented the flow of time. And overall, I think just fairly crisp writing. Yeah, if you wanted to see a movie, like Samir was mentioning the other podcast, where it's about how this guy created his craft, that's not what the movie is. This movie is about him and his wife and the kind of journey the two of them go on, the pitfalls and etc. While he is this larger than life like entertainer, you know. So I personally thought it was pretty good. Number 7, I have Barbie. Again, came into Barbie kind of being lukewarm on it. I think the trailers were pretty bad, but I was overall very impressed by Greta Gerwig's, like, again, craftsmanship on the film. Everything is very crisp. Everything's very well done. I think it became bigger than it is. It's become a bit of a cultural phenomenon now. Maybe it's because of Barbenheimer, the concept of Oppenheimer and Barbie released in the same time. But, you know, this is not a shameless plug, but when I did get a chance to speak with Margot Robbie in person and alongside Greta Gerwig, we discussed, like, how did the film actually explode? Because it could have just not exploded. It could have just been a nothing film. And when you hire Greta Gerwig, she's not a box office draw, and a lot of her movies don't do that well commercially, but this one had a $1 billion hit. And of course that comes with Margot Robbie. She has an incredible amount of star power, but then the alternate side of that is Margot Robbie also released Babylon the same year, and that did pretty poorly. So it's like just everything worked for this movie. In a sense, it's a little bit of magic in a bottle. So I gave it 7th. American Fiction, discussed it last week. It's the same reasons for Zion and Samir. It's just well-written movie. If it wins best screenplay, I won't be upset. Let's move on. Spider-Verse. All right, this movie, every time I saw it, it's 5 out of 5. I saw it 3 times. Each time I saw it, I was like, this is a top-shelf movie. The only reason it's not higher on my list, like Zion had it higher, is that it does suffer from a little bit of part-one-ism, where it's like, it's so caught up in telling half the story that I almost feel like, do we judge it on the merits of these other movies which tell a complete narrative from start to finish? And you guys actually debated me off that ledge. I was thinking more about, hey, maybe it is a complete movie, but you guys convinced me a few weeks ago when we were debating this movie that, hey, you know what, maybe it doesn't have a complete narrative arc, at least for Miles. But still, it's a 5 out of 5 for me. Every movie from here on forward is 5 out of 5. It's everything under was 4.5, by the way. So this is, now I'm talking about top echelon of my movies. And a lot of movies that when I submitted my ballot for the Critics' Choice Association, I gave each of them quite a bit of love. So Boy and the Heron, what more can I say? Miyazaki, he's one of the GOATs. It's just a very, very well-made movie. And yeah, maybe it's not his last movie, this triumphant ending. And honestly, if it was a triumphant ending with maybe letting my bias take over, I would have had it even higher on the list if he actually said it's his last one. But because he has more on the way, and when I look at the totality of his work, it's a 5 out of 5 movie, but it's not in my top 4. Past Lives, again, we haven't had, both of you guys said it already, Bob, we haven't had much time to talk about it. But man, I came to this movie being like, yeah, I know there's a lot of hype around it, but I'm sure it's not that good. And I'm telling you, when I came out of this movie, I was like, yeah, it's peak. It's pretty good. Like, very personal story about, you know, love and about what these two people meant to each other in childhood. And now that they're adults, they just, you know, it's just like their lives of each, you know, through the title have passed each other, and there's no going back. Like, the road, yeah, they've met one more time in this crossroads, but in the end, the pathway for these two people is to be apart. And it's a really, like, a heartbreaking story. And I was like, this is top tier. Let me go back to my list. Where is it? All right. So is this Samir? This is me. Yeah. Right, so, number 2, Killers of the Flower Moon. I absolutely love Killers of the Flower Moon. I think, yes, the only reason is keeping it away from even more higher would have been a little bit of a bloated runtime. But I think the story of what America did to the indigenous is barely been scratched upon. But this movie does a really good job of, like, hyper fixating on this, like, 6-year period, you know? And this is a real period in real life where there was a massacre, where things did happen. And yes, the characters themselves, they're not 100% all real. They're not 100%, they're not historical figures, but it's a great way to draw on, like, the central themes of oppression and bringing it to the forefront. And I think Martin Scorsese, he's become really good at this. And I think this is a huge step forward from Irishman, which was the one he took out three years ago. I think this is one of his best movies. I personally don't know if it's a best director, best picture kind of movie, but I do think it is one of the best movies of the year. But my number one in the end, and it comes down to this movie that I think that the three of us said so far, I think Oppenheimer, this is Christopher Nolan telling everyone, I'm him. He's been saying that to everyone. He's like, yo, I'm him. Like, don't forget my name. Because I think after Tenet, whether you like Tenet or not, some people consider it to be his most divisive movie. It's the movie where they're like, well, I don't know. Nolan's too in and over his head. Oh, no, it's Interstellar. It's all the bad parts of Interstellar made into a whole movie, you know? And there's all these complaints about Tenet. I personally like Tenet. Is it top 5 Nolan? Of course not. At least in my opinion. That's a whole different debate. But I think Oppenheimer is him like, wait, if you let me actually cook and not do like an action adventure movie. This is a movie where it's 3 hours of talking, 3 hours of courtroom drama, and then 10 seconds of a bomb exploding. And it's not even the bomb, it's just the test of the bomb. So it's a very small movie. And yes, there are complaints about what maybe it could have done. And I think he just focused tightly about the rise and fall and the folly of this guy, Oppenheimer. You know, like, he's not a good guy. He's a protagonist, but he's not a good guy. But you watch his story in horror, like, these are people, and I always come back to the scene. It's, in my opinion, the best scene of the entire year. And that's when everyone is sitting in the war cabinet of the United States, and they bring Oppenheimer as a scientist to be like, hey, the bomb is made, but which Japanese city do we drop it on? And then they're like, oh, they're deciding which city is going to cause the, you know, how much civilian death, this and that. And then there's one guy, he's like, no, we can't drop it in this city. I go here on vacation with my wife. I'm like, these guys are so, like, sitting on their high horse and making nothing out of these Japanese lives, that when tens of thousands of people died at the bomb and then the radiation killed many, many more, you think that, yo, this is absolutely disgusting. And you're supposed to feel disgusted in your heart when you're watching it. And I think Nolan pulled that out really nice, you know? So this is, in my opinion, undisputed best movie of the year. I wanted to win Best Picture. Let's see if it happens. But that is definitely mine. I'm with you and Samir. Umar, I know you didn't watch that many movies this year. It's been a busy year for you. But I want to kind of get your take on the best movie of the year, like, just between what was, like, the number one, if you had, like, put one and be like, this was the one that put the crown on its head for 2023, where would you put it?
So I would put Killers of the Flower Moon 1 only because I enjoyed it, to be honest, more than any other movie this year. Like, when I went to watch it, I just like you said, they don't touch, I mean, Hollywood doesn't touch on what happened to the indigenous people here. Literally, like, multiple genocides at once. But yeah, like, they don't touch on it that much. And I like the fact that they took a very, very, like, specific controlled, like, environment story. that thematically like connected to what happened to the whole population. So I really like that aspect of it. I thought obviously the performances are great. All the actors were amazing. I think with a movie like this, you can always, there's always drawbacks because it is, there's politics involved. So I think one of the drawbacks is that you could have focused more on the indigenous. I think some of the shots, if you watch it, I watched it like two, three times now. I think they were very, very, like, they were obviously hyper-focused on what the movie was about, which is the killers. Like, people are killing people, killing and doing the oppression. But I feel like they could have focused more on the indigenous aspects. They did a good job, but I think you could have done more, especially with the runtime that you had to work with. Now, at the end of the day, it's like, that's what I enjoyed the most, so I'm going to make it my number one. Obviously, Oppenheimer is number one in terms of like the actual, like if I was to like not make it about enjoyment, if I take the enjoyment category out and I just look at it as a movie, of course it's the better movie. Of course it's the best movie probably like this year. But I think I did enjoy Killers of the Flower Moon more, so I'm going to have to go with that. And I actually enjoyed it more than even Spider-Verse, which for me will tell you like that's big because I enjoy those, that genre a lot more. So I think they did a fantastic job.
It's interesting. I mean, I'll stick on Killers for a minute because they actually rewrote this movie on set because the original script had almost like a good ending for Leonardo DiCaprio's character where he kind of gets redeemed in some way, or maybe he learns the error of his ways and stops, you know, the mad tyrant Hale from doing whatever he's going to do, you know. But they decided, they're like, they actually consulted this movie with the indigenous people. There's not many people of the Flower Moon tribe left, but the Osage talked to these people and they kind of like work with them, and they're like, hey, do not make this movie a white savior movie. And that's the note they kept giving back to Scorsese and the whole team, that we can't make it white savior, where in the end Leo DiCaprio, oh, he saves the day and he's gonna do something. So instead, all the white characters, they kind of go out as cowards, you know, in this movie, in the final version that came out. And I agree with them where you could have gone even further. And actually during the premiere, the Osage people who were represented, they said, hey, this is still not perfect. We still wanted more, but we took what we could get. So I think what you parsed from your review is exactly what the actual indigenous people were saying, which is quite poignant. So credit to you on that. So I think, yeah, but I still think what we got was top tier.
Yeah, I mean, also I watched Barbie, and to be honest, I don't have the same opinion on you guys. I personally hated the whole thing.
Didn't like it
from start to finish, but more thematically, not because of the way the movie's made or the way they made it is good, right? The score is, everything was technically, a very technical level was very good. I'm forgetting the YouTube channel, but they did a review on it. I think it's called the One Path Network or something like that. Their review was pretty good. That was pretty much my take on it.
Nice.
But yeah, just wanted to throw that out there.
Great. So that's all of our top 10 movies of the year. What's your top 10 list? Let us know in the comments below and join the debate. From myself, from Zion, from Samir, and from Umar, we're the Faruqi Bros, and we'll see you next time. Peace out.